Chapter 44. D.I. Fintan O'Rourke stood in a pew 3 from the back and fiddled nervously with his tie. He didn't like funerals as a rule, and he had been to too many. Yesterday, he had been at Dara O'Shea's. The family had requested not to have the full-on state affair that was on offer, so the only coppers there had been him and Cunningham, not in their dress uniforms. Jessica Cunningham had been quiet, even by her high standards of frosty silences. For today's funeral, he had also foregone the dress uniform, but that was more a matter of personal safety than personal taste. This was Jimmy Moran's funeral. To say it presented a logistical difficulty was an understatement. The entirety of the Clannavale estate seemed to be packed into St. Joseph's Church. The first two rows were crowded with family. Jimmy Moran's grieving mother at the fulcrum, leaning on what looked like a daughter for support. Behind the Morans were Frank O'Doyle and his family, and beside him were the Carters. Emer looked uncomfortable as always, no doubt made worse by the presence of their father, Donal Carter. Jimmy's casket was a closed affair, very understandable, given the direct gunshot wound to the head. But Dara O'Shea's hadn't been. O'Shea had looked better dead, O'Rourke thought, than Donal Carter looked alive. His skin was a sickly yellow colour that only existed in nature as a warning to others. But he had insisted on being there, apparently, and Donal Carter had never been a man easy to dissuade from anything. The body language before the service had been fascinating. The older Clannavale residents coming up to pay their respects to Donal. The younger showing their deference to Tommy, their boy king. The church was oppressively hot and overcrowded. Regardless, the elderly priest was clearly determined to milk his rare full house for all it was worth. Tomorrow his morning mass would be lucky to hit double figures, and that was allowing for the inclusion of dogs. As the congregation stood, O'Rourke noticed that Carter Sr. couldn't make it to his feet this time. Beside O'Rourke, Detective Pamela Butch Cassidy fidgeted nervously. He couldn't blame her. Beneath the heavy pall of grief at a young man's death, the church was simmering with a low-level, yet palpable resentment of their presence. In truth, O'Rourke didn't want to be here any more than they wanted him, but he had no choice. Tommy Carter and Frank O'Doyle were still the primary persons of interest in the death of a guard and the theft of $16 million in uncut diamonds. Someone had to keep eyes on them at all times. O'Rourke was there because he wouldn't send one of his people into a hostile environment that he wouldn't go into himself. He had chosen Cassidy to accompany him, partly because he had judged the local grunts as being marginally less likely to hit a woman, and partly because she was a former All-Ireland judo silver medalist, which meant they were a lot less likely to enjoy the experience if they tried. Outside, there was a heavy guard of presence, but they had been instructed to stay out of the way as much as possible. It was a tricky balancing act, though, as this was now a lot more than simple surveillance. Someone had taken Moran out, and they still didn't know who. If this was the opening shot of a gangland war, then funerals were traditionally a popular location for the follow-up. Then there was the fact that Moran had been the best friend of John O'Donnell, currently Ireland's most wanted man, who was considered armed and embarrassingly dangerous. O'Rourke wasn't a religious man, but he mouthed along to the prayer and then glanced behind him before he sat down. This wasn't the first funeral he had attended where his presence was not welcome. Without a word, he moved the half-finished, sticky-to-the-touch bottle of children's fruit juice that had mysteriously appeared where his backside was about to be. He actually heard a groan of disappointment as he did so. That small victory was forgotten as Tommy Carter stood, and made his way towards the altar. Cassidy and O'Rourke shared a glance. With no notes, Tommy Carter took up position behind the lectern. He removed his orange-tinted glasses and slowly looked around the room, making eye contact with as many people as possible. Then he looked down at the mahogany coffin in repose before him.
"Jimmy Moran was no angel. I'm not going to stand here and tell you otherwise. He was a man with his strengths and weaknesses, just like the rest of us. None of us are perfect. Are we?"
Heads shook and nodded, depending on whether you were answering the question or agreeing with the statement.
"Jimmy was full of love for his mum, Gina, for his sisters Carol and Sarah, and for his brother Derek. He also loved his community. He would have done anything for a neighbour in need. You could knock on his door, and he'd be out there, helping you start your car, fix a window, you name it. Since we were young fellas, me and him have always cleaned out Mrs. Bourne's gutters every year."
An old lady in the fourth row nodded, teary-eyed, into a tissue.
"Although that was for purely selfish reasons. We were both demons for those fabulous fairy cakes we all know she makes."
A smattering of half-laughs.
"That's what this estate has always been about. Looking after each other. Jimmy's da, Patrick, God rest him. He stood with my da back in the day, in order to keep this estate safe. Nobody else looked out for us, so we looked out for each other. We still do. When the dealers were kneecapping poor Terry Flint back in 1990, where were the Gardaí? When Jerry Fallon and the other drug-dealing scum tried to burn me and my sister alive in our own home, where was the police?"
O'Rourke felt it pass through the congregation, felt eyes burning into him from all sides.
"And when Jimmy Moran, a man who loved his community, and lest we forget, served his country in the army with distinction."
"Yeah," thought O'Rourke, "right up until the dishonourable discharge."
"When he was brutally executed, where were the Gardaí? The Gardaí, who despite him not being under arrest or charged with anything, were following him everywhere. You've all seen them, following us about."
Nods.
"They've been harassing this whole estate. When your car gets done, or your purse gets snatched, where are they? I'll tell you, nowhere to be seen. But now, they've invaded, haven't they? That's because to them, we're not people. No, we're just criminal scum. We're only here to be fitted up and looked down on. Isn't that right?"
With each question, the murmurs of agreement grew louder and louder. O'Rourke's eyes remained fixed on Carter.
"So, where were all these Gardaí who you've all seen following us around when poor Jimmy Moran got shot? I'll tell you. They were right there. They say they can't figure out who shot Jimmy. Course they can. It was them."
Curses and glares were now coming in at them from every direction. O'Rourke felt Cassidy shifting nervously beside him. He spoke, barely moving his lips. "Hold your ground."
"Remember this,"
continued Carter.
"When people ask you what happened, remember this. The Gardaí were the ones who invaded our homes. The Gardaí were the ones who harassed us in the street. And the Gardaí,"
he paused for effect,
"were the ones who fired the first shot in this war. When they executed Jimmy Moran.